540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. President Biden was in Atlanta today taking part in the Ebenezer Baptist Church celebration of what would have been Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 94th birthday. Mr. Biden spoke at the same pulpit where Dr. King once stood and told the congregation the country's at a critical point when it comes to democracy.
Remember that the power to redeem the soul of America lies where it always has lay. In the hands of we the people.
President Biden called King a warrior for justice and says we should pay attention to his legacy. Mr. Biden's still under a lot of scrutiny over the discovery of more classified documents at his home in Delaware last week. Utah Republican Chris Stewart was on Face the Nation and says the president shouldn't have kept them in his garage.
Still, they were available. It's important for us to understand the potential damage these documents and these documents being available it may have caused to the American and American security.
CBS national security contributor and former acting CIA director Michael Morrill also weighed in.
I think we need a separate bipartisan task force that looks at how White Houses handle classified information throughout an administration, but particularly at the end. And I think they need to make recommendations going forward so that these documents are handled with much greater rigor.
The president's personal attorney says he knows transparency is important, which is why they notified the Justice Department immediately. The Treasury Department says the U.S. could hit its debt ceiling later this week if Congress doesn't act to raise or suspend borrowing power. Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock.
And the people who are on the margins, who are the most vulnerable, are the ones who would suffer the most when we put the full faith and credit of the United States government in jeopardy. This is not a game. This is people's lives.
Warnock on ABC's This Week. The debt ceiling deadline is on Thursday. 29 people have died from a Russian missile strike on an apartment building in Ukraine. CBS's Deborah Pata is in Kyiv.
A fresh round of missiles unleashed this weekend smashed into a residential apartment block in Dnipro. Rescue workers paused to listen for survivors in the dark. Is someone alive? They shout in unison among the dead children.
In New York.
American 106 heavy, American 106 heavy, hold position. American 106 heavy, hold position.
The FAA and NTSB are now investigating how two planes at JFK almost crashed into each other. A departing Delta plane stopped on a runway as an American Airlines plane crossed in front of it. It had to go back to the gate and didn't take off until at least the next morning. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you'll seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk, from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday Happier Happy Hour. You know, my little buddy Dom lives for the weekend, but he's already on it. He's an excused absence back on Tuesday, but, you know, he's never quite excused. So instead, I got to find Code Devil, who's joining me right now. I want to thank my most recent guest, first and foremost, CEO of Civic Media, my partner, Sage Weil. Thank you, Sage, for laying out your vision for 2023. And welcome back to the returning champ, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannoli Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. James Santel, the incomparable. How you doing, counselor?
Neither a champ nor incomparable, but delighted to be with you again this afternoon, Mike.
Man, you got a new haircut. You're looking quite...
I do have a... It got a little short this time, but, you know, it's the kind of the lawyer look, right, for January of 2023.
You're looking quite handsome, counselor. breaking news. Recently breaking, new to me at least, and you probably researched this, counselor, but I'm going to throw it out there. The E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit against the former president, Donald Trump, and she accused him of raping her in a Bergstrom's department store many years ago. And during the political campaign, Trump said effectively, never happened, she's lying, and she filed a defamation lawsuit. Now, my understanding, the original lawsuit was dismissed. Is that the correct sequence of events?
It was through some machinations of the prior administration having to do with the Federal Tort Claims Act and whether it comes into federal court. And so if, in fact, the original lawsuit was subject to a ruling on whether or not the United States of America is substituted for Donald Trump, then it would be dismissed. So it's a little bit complicated under the jurisdiction, but you're right. We've got even more action even since that.
Well, and the depositions taken of the former president, they've been released. They've been unsealed. The Trump team was supposed to be responsive to the court in like 3 days. There is a new legal challenge under what, New York's sexual assault law that effectively there's no statute of limitation. So while this was originally a civil defamation suit under this newer New York law, it's really a rape case, is it not, Jim?
Yes. And so we've got a separate, again, the other one, arguably state case, arguably federal, This, again, under this new law that basically captures for a period of 1 year those people whose statute of limitations would otherwise expire. It permits claims to be filed. And that's what E. Jean Carroll did fairly recently, just the fall of last year, under this new theory, under this new New York law that really does permit her to resurrect an assault claim, which is different from the civil defamation claim. Again, also prompted, however, by the former president's repeated statements in the public domain that this never happened, which, again, doesn't help if you're looking to avoid lawsuits. So we do have both of those still pending. And then it's inside all of this that his recent deposition transcript ordered by the district court judge in the other case that is a deposition transcript now released about what he says and does not say about what happened at that in the 90s at that Bergdorf Goodman store.
Well, I don't know about the complete transcripts, but the very first question asked of the former president, according to reporting at Politico at this hour, effectively got tripped up. They asked him about the E. Jean Carroll book. She was a writer. She published a book. And they asked him about the publisher. And he's like, bad publisher. Well, who is the publisher? I don't know. Well, the publisher was HarperCollins. Still a bad publisher. Well, the publisher, HarperCollins, published your son-in-law, Jared Kushner's book. Well, they still publish a lot of bad books as well. I mean, this is how it began, Jim. I have not had any opportunity to jump in and read any of the transcripts. Have you seen any further reporting, any additional points where the former president got tripped up, let's say?
Right. I have not. Also, just breaking, as you say, that the again, the transcript released by virtue of this judicial order here. The difficulty, of course, is that the former president now under oath and obliged to answer questions in this civil setting. And the complication here, and again, I haven't seen all of this transcript yet, is that because he is now facing some criminal exposure in the other lawsuit, the question is, did he raise the Fifth Amendment? What kinds of things did he say? And plainly confronting the questions of E. Jean Carroll's attorneys about what happened. And my general sense from seeing some of the reporting here is quite pointed and quite specific. We'll have to kind of revisit the exact statements that he made after there's further digesting of all this. But it certainly complicates his criminal exposure, his civil exposure, a lot of things going on here. All of it, because when he was in the White House, he decided to take her on and say, you know what? As you said, she's a liar. This never happened. Again, as we've talked so many times before, if he had simply said nothing at all, probably all this would have gone away. We'd have some articles out there and that would be it. He is in many ways his own worst enemies when it comes to these things that he says in public. Now he's in double trouble, and we'll take another look at the transcript as we get more into that document.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Finest of guests, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. More importantly, he is the host of Morning Cannolis. Give him a taste every Saturday morning, 9 to 11 a.m. all across the Civic Media Network. Replayed Sunday mornings at the same time. Well, Jim, there is some other big news on the legal front. A special counselor appointed by Merrick Garland to investigate not Donald Trump, but the current president for his own, as I would probably term them, paperwork crimes. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, what do you know about the special counselor, Robert Hur, other than the fact that he's a Trump holdover?
Right, absolutely. So former U.S. attorney in Maryland, and again, a Trump nominee, a Trump appointee, served a little while most recently at the law firm of Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, which is a very reputable law firm there in Washington, D.C., other places, and was previously, of course, inside the Department of Justice, inside the operation, the leadership of the department, a graduate of Stanford Law School, Harvard College. We recall well that Rod Rosenstein was our former deputy attorney general. This fellow, Mr. Hur, former U.S. Attorney Hur, served as one of his principal deputies during that period of time. So he plainly has credentials. He has been a prosecutor for a while. He's got some civil experience. And again, the attorney general has plucked him up again to follow up on his decision to appoint a special prosecutor, undeniably, as he has been doing recently, reaching across the aisle to find a Republican so that he is avoiding the claim, the allegation, the charge that this is, whatever the decision is made, it's a product of partisan views and partisan viewpoints here. So that's who her is. Again, beyond that, I'm sure we'll chat about this more. Significant differences, as the media and others are saying, between what we know about the Biden case and what we know about the Mar-a-Lago Trump case. But nonetheless, the kind of thing that Merrick Garland has got to be saying, gosh, I don't need this kind of additional investigative work to do. I've just got to be focused on what I've got on my docket already.
Jim Santel, my fine guest. Jim, let's talk about the differences. I was going there next. You led me. I have been quick to dismiss the paperwork crimes, as you've heard me describe them, against the former President Donald Trump, despite the classified nature, despite the voluminous nature, because I have thought there are probably more specific and more significant criminality that the former president was guilty of. It's not that I think he should get away with it. It's that if he is charged, indicted with some crime on the federal level, I think Jack Smith, the special counselor, should really be looking at the January 6th activities.
Yes.
But here we find our guy, my guy, Joe Biden, the guy I voted for, the guy I've been rooting for, at minimum being very sloppy, setting a very bad optic. And then when it's two sets of documents, you got him in the garage out by the Corvette. I mean, you got to take flack from guys like Peter Doocy from Fox News. So, Jim, obviously the optics for the current president, they're awful. But there are quite a bit and significant differences between the two men and how they responded and their conduct. So please help differentiate between the paperwork crimes of the former and the paperwork crimes of the current.
Right. Concurrence right off the top with you and your perspective that Jack Smith should be focusing on January 6th. And hopefully sometime soon we'll be on this radio broadcast to talk about the return of a grand jury indictment as to those kinds of offenses. As to this one, you're absolutely right. Remember that the matter involving Mar-a-Lago was going on for months, well over a year. Repeated requests from NARA, the National Archives folks, to return these documents, a grand jury subpoena that was not fully complied with, ultimately a search warrant when it became clear that the documents weren't there. What does that all show? That all shows notice on the part of the former president and intent to keep the documents, right? That's one of the big differences here.
Give them back. They're mine, Jim. Give them back.
There you go. Right. Here, what you have, of course, is, again, taking the media's reports at their word, you've got the discovery of these documents, both in the office in Washington, D.C., and then also in Delaware, the disclosure of them right away, even before there's any reasonable probable cause to believe, if you will, that they're sitting there. And again, that reflects what? That reflects a lack of intent to do something illegal. And that's the reason why the broad takeaway here is highly unlikely this is going to lead to a criminal prosecution as opposed to what's going on with Donald Trump side of things.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. A very talented lawyer, my friend James Santel. He does his own show. You better not be holding back the good stuff, Jim. Morning cannolis each Saturday morning right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11. But we ain't done with you yet. Please stick around, James Santel. Everyone, stick around. More Devil's Advocates.
I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My trust didn't come.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page or Squarespace or Google My Business or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden. Hey!
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies expected tonight with a chance for scattered rain showers. Lows dip down to about 33. Southerly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 42. Overcast skies. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow night. Lows level off around 36. Cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. We got the finest of guests. He is Jim Santel, host of Morning Cannolis, every Saturday morning right here on Civic Media. You should be setting your alarm clock, getting up and listening. Listen to him, and then I think the Badgers tip off at noon tomorrow. Jim, appreciate you making some time for the big show this afternoon. And, Jim, there's so much legal news, but nothing, you know, has really been brought to closure. We don't have any closure on any of these issues. So I continue to watch, especially Fulton County, Georgia, Fannie Willis. And we understand the grand jury, the state level grand jury, has come to closure. And we understand the something about like 25, 26 grand jury members, by a preponderance, by more than half, wanted their information, their report released to the public. And there's going to be a public hearing on January 24th. And hopefully, Jim, at that time, we'll know more. But between now and then, could we see criminal indictments? Could that grand jury have recommended criminal indictments against the former president? And when would we know? When would they drop? Can't hear you, Jim. Did you mute yourself, fella? There you are. You're back.
Okay, very good. All right.
When will we know about the indictments in Georgia, Jim?
There you go. Very good. So this was a special grand jury. And again, I don't purport to be an expert in the legal criminal procedure in the state of Georgia, but special grand jury plainly taking evidence presented by the district attorney there, Fannie Willis, for a number of months here. You've seen a lot of reporting about who's testifying there, all being compelled to testify. Those people have been contesting those subpoenas, and they've come to the end of their work. And under the procedures there in Georgia, this special grand jury does not, as I understand it, have the capacity to return an indictment. Nonetheless, they do have findings, and they presumably have delivered those now to the district attorney, who, again, as I understand the procedure there, can now present these to an indicting grand jury and present all this information, doesn't have to go back to square one. That's the procedure there. And so, depending upon Fannie Willis's burning the midnight oil, getting these other things in place, it is entirely possible that we are coming to the end of that pre-trial, pre-charging procedure, and a new grand jury there in Fulton County taking on the work of this special grand jury could now return an indictment again, focused upon what happened in Georgia, but especially focused upon the attempts by the president and his cohorts to try to affect the election there, the results of the 2020 election, 11,780 votes, that request of the Secretary of State, all of that focused on this, but also more broadly. She plainly was focusing on many things related to the election there, and all of that could come out, I believe, virtually any time now. It'd be interesting to see. She may, in fact, be somewhat opposed to having the release of all this before that decision is made for a variety of different reasons. But there is a time yet between now and the hearing. That could happen at any time, as I understand procedure there. And we could see some very significant news coming out of Georgia. And more beyond that narrow point, important point, but a narrow point nonetheless, it may well be that this could be among the most important criminal prosecutions of the former president and other people surrounding him. Why? Because this one could survive beyond a Biden administration. This one's not subject to pardon authority by a future president. And if Fannie Willis and the grand jury there indict, this one could, in fact, go to trial and go to conviction and presumably an appellate ruling supporting that conviction. We have talked before about the timing concerns right now with Merrick Garland indicting, Jack Smith indicting, and the problems with basically 22 months or so getting all of that done during this first term of the Biden administration. So again, the focus that you have, Mike, upon Georgia and about what Fannie Willis is doing cannot be overstated. And this may be the one that we're all looking at, not only very soon, but also historically.
Jim, you pointed out your expertise are in the federal courts, but why the redundancy of grand juries? Why must you bring one to closure and then what? Turn around and present the findings of this grand jury to the next? How does that part work? And does the second grand jury bring the indictments, or are they already recommended? And why can't Fannie Willis act upon the findings of the first grand jury?
Sure. As I understand it, once again, it is a vagary. It is an aspect of Georgia criminal procedural law. Every state has some differences. Not all states have grand juries, those kinds of things. And that's the way they do it there. Plainly, we've got a different federal system where we've got one grand jury that takes information, takes testimony, and then can also return a grand jury indictment, that same group. It certainly seems to make a whole lot more coherent, if you will, certainly efficient use of time to do it that way. This is the reality in Georgia. Not to say, however, that it further slows down the process. My sense is that by doing it this way, you've got a grand jury that truly is fact-finding, and their mission, if you will, to the extent that it might suggest that they've got an indicting mission as opposed to a charging mission, the notion here is find out what happened here. Give us the facts. And let somebody else, a different grand jury, a different prosecution unit, determine whether or not what you have found in your exploration of the facts supports a grand jury indictment. I suspect it's simply affording defendants and the system generally a greater amount of due process and procedure that, again, strikes those in the federal system, including me, as being a little bit cumbersome, but nonetheless, the way that it can, in fact, result in a charge there out of Georgia.
My fine guest, Jim Santel. Jim, I'm going to ask you to stick around for one more segment. Then we'll keep some time at the end of the show for the airing of the grievances. But I'll at least express the question I have. We talk about the paperwork crimes of Mar-a-Lago. They seem so very obvious. The former president, well, he had the documents. But unfortunately, we also know the current president's got his own paperwork crimes, his own classified documents issue. Jim, I have looked at the case in Georgia predicated on the evidence that is in the public record. And specifically, I mean the phone call. I need 11,780 votes, one more than I have, he said. One more than he needs one more. He needs one more than that to win in the state of Georgia. Well, it was on tape. Come back. Lordy, there was tapes. Our fine guest, James Santel, more of the Happier Happy Hour. You're listening to the Devil's Advocates.
But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again.
It's not personal.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
CBS News Brief. President Biden spoke from the pulpit of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta today, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once stood.
Thank you for the honor of inviting me to be called to America's freedom church.
He helped mark what would have been Dr. King's 94th birthday. Republicans and Democrats are frustrated by the handling of classified documents recently found in President Biden's possession. California Congressman Adam Schiff.
We have asked for an assessment in the intelligence community of the Mar-a-Lago documents. I think we ought to get that same assessment of the documents found in the think tank as well as the home of President Biden.
Schiff on ABC. Meantime, the U.S. could hit its debt ceiling soon, but House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said Congress should focus on cuts.
If you look just in the last 4 years that Democrats were in the majority, they increased discretionary spending by 30%. When Republicans were in majority for the 8 years prior, they didn't increase it by $1.
He was on Fox. CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underly said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
We have a full hour with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley.
Yes, thank you for having me. So glad to be in studio.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
You know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you are a union member or business owner, picking up your garbage has no partisan lines. Making sure people can get to and from work shouldn't have partisan lines.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on The Shaw.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. That makes it Friday Eve up around here. I got to find co-devil for the day. He is Matt Rothschild. Call him Batman from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. But I promised you, you could be next on the phones. Line him up in the queue at 844-967-2789. Batman, against my better judgment, we're starting with CJ today. Welcome back, CJ. What do you got for us? Oh, where's CJ? Off gallivanting. Lost your opportunity for the day, CJ. 844-967-2789. Karina, welcome, Karina.
Hi, good evening.
So hey, how are you? Yes, ma'am.
About everything. Is racism actually legal in or illegal in the United States?
I'm sorry. Is what illegal or illegal? What I didn't hear what the subject of the question was.
Racism.
Racism? In and of itself, racism is not illegal, but if you do something violent and it's motivated by racial hatred, that would be potentially a hate crime enhancer.
And discriminating against people on the basis of race is a violation of the 14th Amendment. So, you know, having a racist attitude or expressing a racist belief in and of itself isn't criminal unless you're committing another crime, as Crudy said. But if you're discriminating against people on the basis of race, that's a racist activity that's illegal.
So how does it work with freedom of speech?
Well, you can say pretty awful stuff. You may incite someone with hate words. You could incite them to punch you in the nose, and they might have a defensible case, which normally it would be assault. You punch someone in the nose. Well, if I spewed a racial epithet and somebody punched me in the nose, that may be defendable from the...
Under fighting words doctrine, yeah.
So I'm asking all these questions because of that action against Hispanic and African Americans, and advocating basically that you really okay sitting home and not to vote for your freedom, not to vote for your voice, not to let people know what you think. It's just fine because we're gonna deliver your message. Don't worry about it. So how you can actually go after those people? Because this is ridiculous. That on the level of a government, it's the government level. If the government people sending refugees to a governor or a vice president home, then why are so upset about not letting people into this country, or somebody talking about we don't need immigrants anymore, even the people who are the first generation who born here. And
Karina, I'm going to cut you short. I just want to see if we can kind of narrow it down a bit. Using race as a determinant, trying to suppress certain demographics of racial voters. Well, unfortunately, that's been happening since Jim Crow. That's been happening since the dawn of voting rights for African Americans at minimum. And I would say that in and of itself, if I put a campaign ad out there and I say, you know what, you know, if it was so blatantly obvious, but they're not blatant. They usually don't say, hey, if I was black, I'd stay home. What they usually say is, Democrats don't deliver. Democrats don't do this. Democrats don't do anything.
Yeah, what have the Democrats ever done for you? That was their pitch this year, I think.
Well, that in and of itself is a valid argument you could make. I might disagree with it. I might say, well, there's plenty of reasons for African Americans to get out and vote because these issues affect their lives. But it's up to the actual voters. I don't think it's a crime per se to put out messaging. And the fact that Bob Spindell is an elections commissioner, and the fact that he's showing the partisan nature, I think that's far more problematic. I think the fact the guy might criminally have committed a crime as a fraudulent Trump elector, and the fact that he's sitting on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, I think that's a far greater problem in this circumstance. But I would say if the Republicans, let's say, had elections inspectors that stood at Milwaukee at black polling places and tried to discourage people, intimidate people, well, certainly that may fall under the Voting Rights Act. There might be differing ways that would be a crime in and of itself. I'm not sure that that's what I heard explained in any of these emails. They weren't claiming that sort of direct confrontational stopping or discouraging people from voting so much as just putting those messages on the on the airwaves.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not sure you could make a Voting Rights Act claim or a 14th Amendment claim. You might be able to, but certainly if it wasn't illegal, it was tremendously immoral. And just so disreputable to be doing this. But again, this has been standard Republican playbook for generations. I just want to read one quote from 1980 from Paul Weyrich, who was one of the leaders of the Christian Coalition. Here he goes. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections aren't won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they're not now. As a matter of fact, and here's the kicker, our leverage in the election quite candidly goes up as the voting population goes down. And here, Robert Spindell was going after a specific part of the voting population, bragging about suppressing the vote of blacks and Latinos in Milwaukee. And I just don't see how this guy can remain on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, given that appalling brag.
You know, I can Batman our good friend Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy campaign. Batman, I can tell you, he's getting air support real time over on Vicki McKenna's show. Down the dial, Righty Whitey Talk Radio. They're saying circle the wagons. Hell, she's got Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. riding up, you know, he's the posse riding the town in defense of Bob Spindell. Because Bob Spindell effectively is the voice of the craziest fringe of the Republican base, the MAGA base, the election-denying base. But, of course, the fact that this man that denies the outcome of the last election, that would be a fraudulent Trump elector, because, what, Trump's lawyer said it was okay to do so, it's swell, and then go bragging as a Republican partisan CD chair, hey, man, we knocked down these black voters. We found the effective messages that talked them out of voting this time.
Yeah, it wasn't like we convinced them to vote Republican. It's just we made it so ugly out there that they just decided not to cast their ballot. I mean, elections should be won in two ways. One, by getting your own base out, and two, by convincing a fraction of people who don't already agree with you that maybe your ideas are the best ideas, or certainly better than the other guys. This third way, trying to make it so unpalatable for people even to vote, or erecting obstacles like getting rid of drop boxes or putting in voter ID to make it more difficult for people to vote, that's just reprehensible.
844-967-2789. Cassandra from Madison, say hi to my friend Matt.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, ma'am, you are.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Well, you know what? I've been listening to the topic of today, and I just want to offer a little bit more information. I don't know if you all have had a chance to look at Roland Martin. He did an analysis on the Mandela Barnes race, and he investigated the turnout in Milwaukee, and where the voter turnout dropped dramatically was in what he called the black political power corridor. In other words, these were the areas where there was the black middle class. For some reason, and I'm still not understanding why, because I don't live in Milwaukee, the black middle class did not show for Mandela Barnes. And if you have a chance, please YouTube that video and watch the results. Now, the black middle class, these are people who have IDs. These are people who have a habit of voting, but for whatever reason, they just did not want to support Mandela Barnes. And so the story is a little bit more complicated than just voter suppression from whites. It's not to say that the Republican Party did not employ a strategy where they were trying to stop blacks from voting, but something went on in Milwaukee, and no one really wants to talk about why that black middle class did not show up. And he showed the voting decline for that particular area from the 2018 midterms and the 2022 midterms. Now, Mandela Barnes, I did vote for him, but to be honest with you, I don't believe he was the strongest candidate. In many ways, he really wasn't ready for this Senate to make this run. I think he should have stayed lieutenant governor, and he should have required a stronger political resume.
Cassandra, do you think as the lieutenant governor in 2018, he was obviously the sidekick to Tony Evers at the top of the ballot, and right. he was on the ballot that received that higher turnout in 2018. I think a lot of there were a lot of times they did funny jokes about, you know, age averaging Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes' age, and they're, you know, they're about 45 collectively. You know, there were lots of things, but a lot of the time, Mandela, I mean, Tony would come out, he'd say hi, and here's my friend Mandela Barnes, and Mandela would give the more dynamic speech. Mandela would be the front man, the pitch man on behalf of the campaign team. Cassandra, understand that 2018 turnout had the same candidate.
Well, you know what? The issues for 2018 and 2022, they were very different. In 2022, people were dealing with an inflation. There were economic issues that people were primarily concerned with. And you know what? If you think about Mandela Barnes's race and his key campaign message, it was, I am the parents of a teacher and his father being something else.
Working third shift.
Really nothing more. What's that?
Oh, just talking about his parents' resume. Matt, you, his dad, worked third shift at the plant.
Didn't everybody? I hear you, Cassandra, but let me just say a couple things. One, getting rid of Dropbox has hurt turnout in Milwaukee. Number two, the stuff that Bob Spindell's bragging about, these ads that they ran on black radio in Milwaukee may have had an impact as well. I also think Mandela's own ads were not effective. That peanut butter and jelly ad wasn't good. That ad where he's bringing pizzas into the classroom didn't change anybody's mind. So I think there is a lot to go around there. But to have a guy who's an official in Wisconsin on, of all things, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, boasting to fellow Republicans about how great it was we suppressed black and Latino votes in Milwaukee, that is something that just sticks in my throat.
Well, you know what? This, you all should not be surprised that this was their tactic.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
That's all I'm saying. But I will get off the air. I'm sure there are other callers. But I'm enjoying the show.
Well, Cassandra, we appreciate you listening. Thanks for being a part.
I mean, the fact that, you know, no one should have been surprised. The Mandela Barnes campaign shouldn't be surprised about the racist ad that came from Ron Johnson or from Diane Hendricks and Richard Eline. That was another thing that annoyed me about the campaign. They were caught flat-footed when they shouldn't have been caught flat-footed.
I wonder if Mandela Barnes was not the candidate of white progressives. I mean, Mandela lost to Lena Taylor in Milwaukee when he tried to run for state Senate. Didn't win the primary. Lost to probably Lena's got her own pluses and minuses.
But that was a suicide race on Mandela Barnes' part. I don't know why he did it. You know, I've seen Lena Taylor perform in the Capitol. That woman is tough. And she's tough right in the face of Republican elected officials and won't get them, let them get away with anything. And I didn't see how he was going to win that race from Jump Street.
And he did not. Come back with us, Devil's Advocates. You're always a winner when you listen and join us on the phones, 844-96-PARTY.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Chance for scattered showers tonight, otherwise overcast skies. Lows level off around 33, south winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 42. Cloudy skies expected. Overcast skies tomorrow night. Scattered rain showers likely. Lows level off around 36. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Matt Rothschild, co-deviling all day long. You can be a part as well. 844-967-2789. Been discussing a Wisconsin Republican appointee to the Elections Commission. I take great umbrage with the fact that he was a fraudulent Trump elector and should be criminally charged. But most of the topic today has been about the fact that he bragged to the 4th CD, where he is the 4th CD Republican chair, bragged to the people he sent an email to. He's been suppressing the vote. And by suppressing the vote specifically, they claimed that they had targeted African-Americans and Latino in the Milwaukee area and had convinced them to stay home. In numerically significant numbers, 37,000 in a race that saw Ron Johnson only get reelected by about 27,000 votes. Well, here's a similar headline. I'm throwing this one at you, Matt. You see, the reports are back. The research is back about the Russian bots and their influence on the 2016 campaign. And obviously, there was an effort, what they call them, Russian troll farms. They were making a concerted effort to utilize misinformation, disinformation, and change the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. And if we understand properly, primarily, they were targeting Hillary Clinton. Now, if I recall correctly, there were actually, in regards to the Red Arrow Park, some of the unrest that happened in the Milwaukee area, there were tweets being sent out by this Russian troll farm targeting specifically Milwaukee, trying to create more chaos in the area. But Matt, I think you pulled it up. It wasn't a big deal. Ultimately, the troll farms weren't a big deal. They didn't change the outcomes.
You know, I always was skeptical of the claim. I knew the Russians were trying to influence it, but there was so much going on, so much traffic on social media, so many talking heads on TV, that it seemed an implausible claim that the Russians tipped the balance for Trump. It always seemed to me that, James Comey had more of an influence defeating Hillary Clinton than the Russians did. James Comey, by coming out just a few days before the election, saying we're going to reinvestigate Hillary Clinton, which was an outrageous thing to do and against Justice Department policy. And, of course, I also think Hillary Clinton owns some responsibility for running a bad campaign, for not coming to Wisconsin, for having a bad slogan like "It's her turn." Or her time, or whatever the hell that was.
I'm with her. I mean, do you know, literally, I didn't know the Hillary Clinton bumper stickers during the 2016 elective cycle. I'm like, I thought they were just generic Democratic Party stickers. I didn't even know that was meant to represent her candidacy.
I mean, it's the opposite of what a slogan should do and what a politician who's running for office should do, which is to tell the voter what you're going to do for the voter. And so, I understand where she was coming from, and it was appealing to feminists out there. I get that, but it wasn't appealing to the wider audience. And she needed to get to Wisconsin. She couldn't find Wisconsin with, GPS and a map.
No, I'm not here to defend the campaign team of Hillary Clinton because I took a little umbrage in real time. But she did come to the state of Wisconsin twice earlier before she won the primary because I broadcast them. I was at UW-Milwaukee in the room when Hillary Clinton broadcasted a little interesting story, Matt. She had this podium. They had American flags. And before she came to the podium, they had moved her inside from outside. The flag goes crashing into the podium. It would have split her head wide open. I mean, anyone standing at that podium, and she was the next speaker. Oof. So this was after they'd cleared all the preliminaries.
Who did the advance work there?
This was supposed to be an outdoor event. They moved it indoors. Like, they jammed way more people in the UWM. 3,000-4,000 in a room that probably fit two. I mean, we were in the press pen. They were letting people in the press pen. I stood on a chair so visually I could see the candidate during the course of our broadcast. But anyway, she was there, and then she was on campus here in Madison, met Dave Weigel from the Washington Post that day. He joined us on the air. But it was an intimate little gathering of like 250 on campus.
How'd she do there?
She was fine. It was about a 20-25 minute speech. Now, I saw Hillary Clinton out in South Central LA the day of the California primary. And people had been waiting at 8 o'clock in the morning. We hit the air at about 1 o'clock Pacific time, about 3 o'clock Central time at that time. And people had been waiting that whole time. She came to the stage about an hour later, did a solid 8 minutes and left. 8 minutes in the sun for 8 minutes of Hillary.
And how was her talk? Was it okay? I know it was this isn't a lot for people
brief.
Who are waiting for 6 hours, but
it was brief. I can tell you this. And it seemed unbelievable to so many of our Hillary Clinton supportive friends. And I had David Poof, whatever the guy's name, right. He was on my show a week before the election. What do you think the numbers are? 100% ironclad guarantee Hillary Clinton's the next president. Oof. That's what he's telling people. And I think in no small part, that sort of certainty gave license to those that would stray and vote for a Jill Stein. Or say, you know what, I didn't like the way it all played out. Now, I personally voted for Hillary Clinton that year. But I believed when the electoral results came down that night, I believed it. And there are so many people, as much as we blame the Trump, the Trump people, it was rigged. Well, Hillary Clinton wasn't out there telling her supporters it was rigged, but she did certainly bemoan the Comey and the different aspects of the electoral cycle. And there have been many Hillary supportive that have said, I just don't believe Hillary lost. It must have been the Russian troll bots, et cetera, et cetera.
No, it wasn't. And also, where was she in the last 10 days of the election? I remember seeing her going down to Texas and going down to Arizona, and we needed her here. And I also remember, Michael Moore saying, look, Trump can win this thing. And that's because he's in Michigan, and he drives around in Michigan. And I was driving around in Wisconsin, and you could leave Dane County and drive to Sheboygan. And once you got out of Dane County, you were not seeing any Hillary signs. All you saw were Trump signs. And again, you could drive up to anywhere, Wausau, you could drive to La Crosse and Eau Claire, the same thing. And so anyone who got outside of Dane County knew that, wow, there's a lot of popularity for Trump out there. And she wasn't connecting with people here because she said, the economy's okay. Let's keep going. And for a lot of people, the economy stank.
I can tell you this. Hillary had the best surrogates. I mean, we got everyone from General Wesley Clark to, hell, they'd offer us Hollywood actors. Hey, Hillary's not coming, but she's got the best, coolest friends. Cory Booker, we got so many great guests, care of the Hillary campaign. But we really want the candidate. I just wanted to hear her come on the show and say, please vote for me. Bernie Sanders, literally the day of the primary, 2016, state of Wisconsin, I think it was early April. Bernie said, please vote for me. Bernie crushed it. Bernie won the state in the primary by double digits. Donald Trump got beat by double digits. Donald Trump came back to the state of Wisconsin, barnstormed, did about 6 campaign stump stops in the last 2 months, and he won.
And Bernie was urging, came here and urged people to vote for Hillary, too.
He did. Come back, more devils.
It's not a close call. Those were lies Plain and simple. It's a close call.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.